Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, June 15th, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening in on Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also consider taking our 90-hour court access in the common law course, teaches due process. You can find the links on the front page and in the description below. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. We also have a Bible study every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time right here in this dark meeting room. Okay, we'll start with tonight's scripture. I think we're in Mark. Let me see if I can open that up. Yep, Mark chapter 5. Read by Alexander Scorby, Mark chapter 5.
Chapter 5. And they came over unto the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gadarenes. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with chains, because that he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. But when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him, and cried with a loud voice, and said, What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? I adjure thee by God that thou torment me not. For he said unto him, Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit. And he asked him, What is thy name? And he answered, saying, My name is Legion, for we are many. And he besought him much that he would not send them away out of the country. Now there was there, nigh unto the mountains, a great herd of swine feeding. And all the devils besought him, saying, Send us into the swine, that we may enter into them. And forthwith Jesus gave them leave. And the unclean spirits went out and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea, they were about 2,000, and were choked in the sea. And they that fed the swine fled, and told it in the city and in the country. And they went out to see what it was that was done. And they come to Jesus, and see him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion, sitting and clothed, and in his right mind. And they were afraid. And they that saw it told them how it befell to him that was possessed with the devil, and also concerning the swine. And they began to pray him to depart out of their coasts. And when he was come into the ship, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. Howbeit Jesus suffered him not, but saith unto him, Go home to thy friends, and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee, and hath had compassion on thee. And he departed, and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him. And all men did marvel. And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him, and thronged him. And a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse, when she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind, and touched his garment. For she said, If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, Who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, Who touched me? And he looked round about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace, and be whole of thy plague. While he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further? As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, Be not afraid, only believe. And he suffered no man to follow him, save Peter, and James, and John, the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and seeth the tumult, and them that wept and wailed greatly. And when he was come in, he saith unto them, Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. But when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel, and unto her, Talitha cumi, which is, being interpreted, Damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years. And they were astonished with a great astonishment. And he charged them straitly that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given her to eat.
Okay, by the way, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it's *6 and 1 if you're on a phone. And there should be a button there if you're on an app or a browser. Terry, is that you here or Jan?
Yeah, I'm here, John.
How are you doing, Jan? Do we have any? I see you got the site up and going again. Those downloads of the day, huh?
Yep, we got everything back in order, I think.
Okay,
hopefully.
Great. Yep, see it working. Yep. So, all right, what do we got?
Well, tonight, just reminding people, we have two large gatherings coming up. The first is the Reawaken reunion. That's General Flynn and Clay Clark. That comes up next week.
Yeah, I apologize. Okay. You were interrupted by me.
Go ahead. So anyway, that's the joint General Flynn, Clay Clark, and a whole host of other speakers for 2 days. And it's at Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's at the Sheridan Church, which is at 7901 East 41st Street in Tulsa. If you want to get tickets for that, that one requires a ticket. And that you can get at www.sheridan.church. And they have a sliding scale of people. They start out at $250 if you walk in off the street. If you're a veteran, I think it's half of that, or if you're a student, and so on and so forth. So if you're interested in going, and it's not that far off, I'd highly recommend it. And you can talk to them, and I'm sure they'll discount your ticket. The second, I guess it's also this website, https://rumble.com, and it has a long link to it, has all of the particulars on it and the speakers and so on and who's going to be there. Now, the Red Pill, that's coming up in July 11th and 12th.
That link is out on our email, did it not, on the newsletter?
Yes, all of this information is in the email for the announcement.
Okay.
That's the 14th Red Pill. And it is free to live stream. I signed up a couple days ago so I can listen. I looked and there's a couple of really good speakers there I want to hear. One of them is Brian Artis, and there are several others that I've listened to on and off over the years. And if you sign up and get your free seat, you also have access to all of the talkers, all of the speakers, and that information for 30 days, I think it is. And they also have like the last 8 or 10 Red Pill Expos that they've had. They're normally a couple times a year. This one's going to be held in Las Vegas. If you're going to live stream or whatever, the link for it is https://redpilluniversity.org/expo-homepage. And that'll get you the list of speakers and all that, and a little bit about their bios for the speakers. So that's the extent of the announcements, except we did receive 3 or 4 more submissions for questions for Darlene. Some of them are way too detailed in what they want to do rather than questions for the sheriff. So I think John's going to address the issue of what a question is and what we need for questions for Dar, since it's he's coming on to answer questions for us. If you have questions that can be answered by John or the other people here on the call, please don't send them in to Dar, as I'm sure there's going to be more than enough questions to keep us going for a long time with Dar's stuff. I only have one question tonight. I sent 2 of them that were really long and kind of wandered around back to the people who originated them and asked them to just, you know, send us about 4 or 5 facts about what their situation is and a question or two to go along with it. So we should hear back from them for next week. Now, the first question says, hello, I have a question and not yet the communique. Glad to hear it. I have spoken to several, Richard included, and I am not sure who Richard in particular is. Do you have all the actual requirements for the job of sheriff on your county, on your state property recorded, and supporting evidence to prove it? I ask because not one of the 36 Oregon sheriffs have complied with the Oregon State 206. And the county recorders in the HR with proper oath to the proper constitutions with the laws of nature and nature's God included. We did an audit. They all failed. They are notified. They do not self-correct. Courts judge the law, not judges. And that really does not have a question either. It's a statement.
All right, well, maybe I can respond a little bit to that.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the sheriffs are as ignorant to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the law as the people are. And I speak to myself first, but I have decided to educate myself, and the purpose of National Liberty Alliance is to teach the people, what liberty is, who we are as a people, teach about the Constitution and your Bill of Rights, your unalienable rights. And, of course, you know, I go through this often. We're abused all day long in the court. And we have to win our courts back. It's that simple. If people are interested in winning our courts back, then they have to support the work we're doing here. Now, I sent a paper, and this is the second paper, maybe even the third, I don't remember. I believe it is the third presentment we sent to the United States Supreme Court. We got those, they returned them 2 times. This time they returned with a letter, and I addressed it to the chief clerk. Okay, and the chief clerk responded through another clerk, name is Robert Meek. He also referred to Scott S. Harris as the clerk, which would be the chief clerk. And I might read that tonight after we go through some questions. We need to respond to this. We sent these papers out and served them to about 30 individuals in the Trump administration. and of course to the United States Supreme Court. We need to answer this letter, and we need, of course, to respond to all those people at the Trump administration also, you know, because we've got to keep them abreast of what we're doing. We have to educate them because they don't know the law either. I mean, maybe Trump does. I don't know that he does. He's surrounded by a lot of lawyers. He's always dealt with lawyers. And so I don't know what he really knows. He's doing a great job, though. They have been saying certain things that make me believe that they might know. And I'm talking about his entire administration. And whether they learned from us or they knew anyway, you know, who knows. But nevertheless, we continue to feed them the law, who we are as a people, the power and the authority of the people. It's the people who make the law. We ordained and established the Constitution for them, to control them. And they don't even know the law. They changed the law. And they changed the Congress and the Supreme Court. Going back to the 1934 Rules Enabling Act, in 1938 they came up with the rules, and which abrogated the common law, abrogated your Bill of Rights, abrogated the Declaration of Independence, for that is the foundation of our law, of who we are as a people. We're under the laws of nature and of nature's God, but no longer. We're under the laws of men, and as long as we lay idle and not do anything about it, then they'll just continue to erode our liberties. You know, I was watching some things on TV today. I just happened to catch it. You know, a few court cases. It was traffic court, you know. And, this judge, man, he just went crazy on an individual, calling him a sovereign citizen because this person had the audacity to challenge him and to talk about the law. And that's where we're at. And we'll continue to be there, and we'll continue to get worse until we can. Now, what we need to do is we need to respond to this, and I need to respond by letter, which isn't going to take that much to get out, and reserve the papers with the letter onto the Supreme Court. The letter they wrote was very, very short, and like I said, I might read that after we listen to whatever other questions we have. And then after that, we have to follow up with an indictment. You know, the grand jury has already decided that an indictment should be held upon anyone who sabotages the work of the grand jury, that denies the individuals that we have, brought some papers to bear upon, these federal courts particularly. And we've done quite a few indictments over the years. We haven't done one in a while, but again, it has been agreed that anybody who intercepts the work of the grand jury and the presentments that we send in should deserve an indictment. But they think we have to send a letter first to try to educate these people more. I think these people know what's going on. And like I said, maybe I'll talk about it a little more, but first we'll see some of the questions. But when it comes to the sheriffs, we have to educate the sheriffs. If you're not happy with your sheriff and you think there's a problem with the sheriffs in throughout your state, get a campaign going. I mean, we've got a campaign for a constitutional sheriff's going right here in National Liberty Alliance. And if everyone would go to the Welcome tab here and click on, Books by John Darash. Probably the best book, which we've been telling people to send to their sheriff, is Government by Consent. And it's a pretty big book, for those who don't know. It's 550 pages, maxed out to its thickness. It's a hardcover book. And it covers the history of the sheriff, the powers and the authority of the sheriff. And it really educates the sheriff very well. But it also educates the sheriff on who we are as a people. That we're a Christian nation, and that the people are the lawmakers. And people have a hard time comprehending that because we've been so lost in the fiction that they have created for us to live in. And we become sheep. We just go along and pay the fines, go to jail, allow them to beat us up. realize and accept the fact that they're not going to answer anything that the people have to say. Nothing. They don't care. They're in charge. They're the kings. And we've allowed them to be such. A court of law is not to be ruled over by a judge. It's by a tribunal. All courts of law must be ruled over by a tribunal. But we don't have courts of law anymore. It's very rare to try, and if you do get one that appears to be one, it's coming in with a stacked jury. The jury is purely tainted and controlled by the judge and the prosecutor, and only on very rare occasions when an individual, maybe two, in a particular jury, like in a trial jury, might really understand the truth about who we are and the law, and has the opportunity to educate fellow jurors, and they actually come up and free people. That happened out west with the Hammonds. I mean, they really, they shut all of their evidence down, wouldn't permit nothing in, shut them up constantly every time they brought the Constitution up or the unalienable rights of the we the people, tortured them in prison, kept them in prison for quite some time. I forget how long. I believe it was well over a year. And horrific things were done to these people. And the court case was just a sham. The whole thing was a sham. But someone must have been educated there and saw through it and convinced the rest of the jurors the same, and they acquitted them. Then the judge refused to let these people go, claiming that there was another, there was another charges against them in another state, which was untrue, and there was no issue for any, anything for any of these people to be brought back to that other state and to be, go through a trial or anything, and they never did. And they sent them through diesel therapy, for anybody who knows what that is. And they just get away with this. This is what you're going to face if ever a day comes that they decide to come out after you. Because we don't. Now is the opportunity. We've got a great opportunity to get our law, get our courts back. Great, great opportunity. And it's not a lot of money to do so, but it is money. You know, I'm personally having a few financial problems right now, and I have, I'm not making $1 million or anything on my books because they're not in the bookstore. They're just up on Amazon, and so. But whatever money comes into the books goes into National Liberty Alliance, and it covers, the cost of maintaining this website, keeping things up and going, and it also helps to pay for some of the projects we have going. But the next week or two, I'm probably going to have to take that money for my own personal needs. So I'm not going to be able to do much by sending out any papers. And if people want to help get our courts back, maybe they can send us some money. Maybe they can give us $5 a month on a monthly basis. Maybe send an extra $50 or $100 to help get these letters out. But we have to get the letters out. They got to be served. There got to be 30 people plus the United States Supreme Court, and then the indictment after that. Because I do believe that they're still going to ignore us. Like I said, I might read this paper tonight. If I don't read this paper tonight, I'll read it. Not the paper. I haven't written the paper yet, which is response to the letter. But I'd like to read the paper tonight. Maybe we'll see if we have some time. If not, we'll read it next week. And if we read it next week, hopefully I'll have the papers written to be able to send in and read that also, which I believe I can put a really, really powerful, powerful paper. The papers that we sent in was a presentment originally, and that was extremely powerful, I believe. We've read it here on our page here, and we've posted it up. People can read it on our front page. But anyway, let me just finish up with the sheriff here. This hardcover book is only $39.95. We kept it as cheap as possible because we want people to get it. We want people to learn. You don't get a hardcover book, 550 pages, with some serious information for $39.95. Any law book of this type will cost you $100-$200. But again, we're not here to make money, but we are here to get some money to support what we're doing because we have to pay for what we're doing. I mean, we got to pay the mail. We got to pay for paper. We have to, and lots of paper. We got to pay for, you know, the toner. That's extremely expensive. I'm sure most people know that. Anybody who has a printer, I mean, it's ridiculous. You spend more money on toner than you do on purchasing the machine. And that's not a joke. I'm serious about that. I have one machine that was really, it was like $150, $130 I bought some years back. And the toner in itself was close to, you know, like $70-$80. Okay. Matter of fact, I think it was even more than that. So it's almost the full price of the machine is for the toner. And they really make their money on the toner. I mean, they could really give these machines away just so that they could sell their toner. But in any event, these things cost, these things have to happen. So my point being, if we may not be able to get this out for a month because, like I said, I'm running into some financial problems myself and I'm going to have to take the money on my books this month and put it into my bills, and then next month I should be able to do something. And like I said, unless the people out there want to help and help get this out. But as far as getting back to finish off on that question concerning the sheriff, okay, you got to educate the sheriff. We had a great sheriff here in my county, great sheriff. I got him a copy of the book. I've spoken to him before I even wrote the book. He was a really, he was a little ignorant, but he was learning. And I had some handbooks at the time. I gave him that, gave him a copy of Government by Consent book once I wrote it. Unfortunately, he passed away. He had a heart attack and died. And the guy who took his place, it's horrible. We really need to recall him. And that's something that I have to be concerned with in my county. But that's the thing that people don't realize is we can recall sheriffs. We can recall anybody in office. People complain about this and they complain about that. This person's horrible. You know, this congressman is no good. This senator is no good. This mayor, whatever. We can recall them. You know, the people down in New York City, I'm hearing, I don't know how true this is, but I am hearing this, that they're really upset with this Mondami guy, this, you know, communist that has taken power and authority down there. They got prayers and echoing through the streets, you know, the call to prayer, bending their knee to Baal numerous times a day. I think they do it twice, I don't know. I mean, I was born and raised in New York. I mean, this is sickening to me. A Christian nation worshiping or bringing up, echoing through the streets, you know, a call to Baal. Now, I don't know how much of the city that goes through. I know, I'm sure Manhattan is the key point. I don't know that it goes into the Bronx and Brooklyn and Queens and out onto the islands. I don't know. But in any event, it's pretty sickening, and I'm hearing that this kind of thing is really spreading throughout the United States, and we have to do something about this. But, you know, everything starts off with an education. The people down in New York City, you know, they seem to be, and again, you know, I don't really know, you know, this could be just some news from one perspective, and it may not be as large a thing as, but I'm hearing it's pretty large, that a lot of the people that supported this guy and put him in office, they're upset with him, because he lied. You know, he's stealing from one and putting into another. He's trying to get his money out of Albany, and Albany now is shutting him down. He's not going to give him more money. And he's doing all kinds of fugazi things to try to open up these crazy stores, and he was going to give free rides of buses and train fare, all free, and that didn't work out very well. But anyway, he did a lot of crazy things. But if only the people knew, all they have to, it doesn't take a lot of people to do it. It's only a small percentage of the votes that brought this guy into power. You know, you would have to look, you know, they put out a little brochure. It's like a fourfold brochure, and that's done everywhere, you know, information on running for how many ballots, how many petitions you have to get someone onto a ballot. You know, a mayor may require this many. You know, someone else may require that many. A congressman may require this many. And so on and so forth. And it's the same thing with recall. Okay, you only have to get a certain percentage. And if you get 20, 30 people together down in New York City, and you could do a recall, take this guy out of office in a heartbeat. 90 days you can recall. And really 90 days is the process of just pulling the papers together and filing it in, and then they have to set up for a new election to put someone in power. I'm not sure exactly how it works down there as far as a mayor. Even though I came from New York City, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's a second person in charge, and sometimes that person would take that position if you recall someone moved them out of office, or at least for a small period of time. I know, again, all the details of how this works is written up, and the committee men, the statutory committee men, get these things, and they walk the papers, and they get all the information, how many signatures they need for this and that and so on. And all the details are in those little brochures that they put out every election period. And we teach that, by the way, because we are the true committee men. That's what the Committee of Safety is all about. It's not a statutory committee man. It's a free committee man. You're not elected. It's an unalienable right to take control of your government, take control of your school districts, take control of your, depending on what kind of government you have, mayors or maybe you have some kind of a board. And of course, you got even the schools, you got the school boards. I mean, you can remove all these people. You get the brochure, you figure out how many signatures you need, get 20 people in the streets, get out there and get the signatures, and then you go, and they have to go through the recall then. But we don't know about those things because we're ignorant. Instead, we complain and moan and suck it up, you know? We're sheeple. That's what we are. But people need to get together and do things. So if you want a good sheriff, get them the book. It's $39, $40. Everybody can afford. Get a couple people together, throw $5 a piece in, and get your sheriff a book. Educate your sheriff. And tell him you'll meet with him in a month or two to talk with him about these things. And as long as he's willing to be a law enforcement sheriff, then you will support him. And you rally and walk the papers for him. They need people to walk papers for them, you know, to get them into office. And if they're doing the right thing, the statutory committee men aren't going to walk the papers for him, because they don't want him in office if he's a real lawman. You know, he shouldn't be dealing with statutes. He's not a code enforcer. He's a law enforcer. And there's a big difference. You know, I drive down once in a while, you see a sheriff pulling someone over and giving him a ticket. That's total insanity. That's code enforcement. But they're that ignorant. People in Congress are that ignorant. People in your own legislators in your states are that ignorant. All of these elected people, they're ignorant. They keep calling us a democracy. We're not a democracy. We're not a democratic a democracy. A republic. We're not a democratic republic. That's an oxymoron. That's against itself. It's trying to mix the oil and water. It doesn't work. A democracy is totally different from a republic. And just because we elect people because it's common sense by popular vote, that's common sense, that doesn't make us a democracy. Not at all. And we don't elect the president by popular vote. Yeah? So, anyway. People, by the way, this book, Government by Consent, teaches you all these things. It teaches you about the Constitution. It teaches you about the law. It teaches you about our founding documents. It teaches you about the committees of safety, the powers and the authorities of the sheriff, the difference between equity and law. It teaches you a lot about the law. And we're not talking about boring stuff like statutes and regulations. Although those are good, too. They apply towards the people who are working for us in government. It applies towards people in government agencies and the government agencies themselves. It guides them and leads them. So those things are important. But they turn that around and use it against us. They write statutes to control your behavior. And we're so ignorant that we don't understand and know that they don't have that power. They don't have that authority. It's not in the Constitution. It was purposely left out because we declared that we're under the laws of nature and of nature's God. And we are to be judged by our peers, not by some man who or woman that works for the government. I mean, that's all upside down, you know? How is it that the servant judges the master, you know? And we go, we let it be, it continues. Anyway, educate your sheriff. Get them the book, Government by Consent. And, you know, we do have some handbooks. They're pretty cheap. They're only a few bucks. There's a sheriff's handbook down here you can get. And you can get them, you know, maybe a half a dozen of those. They're pocket handbooks. And he can give them out to his sheriffs. His deputies. But, you know, you can't expect them to do their job if they don't know what their job is. They went through the same education we went through in schools, and we didn't learn civics, and we didn't learn about the Constitution. We didn't learn about the law of the land. We didn't learn who our founding fathers really were. We didn't learn that we're a Christian nation. We didn't learn that we're under the laws of nature and of nature's God. We didn't learn the difference between equity and law. We didn't learn any of those things. We didn't learn that we have the power and the authority to remove people from office, that we have the power and the authority to indict. And it's up to the people to judge an individual through a trial by jury, free and independent, not only to decide on the facts, but also the law and even the penalty to be applied. Everything is supposed to be done by the people. And you know, I was just reading up on some things, doing a little research, and I came upon a few things and it was by the Supreme Court. And we talk about this, I've heard about this a little earlier on, but I've got some Supreme Court rulings which I'm going to make use of probably in this letter. There was a ruling, and it looks like there's more than one, but anyway, there's a ruling that when a grand jury puts forth an indictment and states exactly what that person is to be charged with, that they can't change it. They can't add to it. They can't take away from it. They can't negotiate any kind of a deal with the person who's being brought up on charges if it's a criminal case and it must go to trial. They can ask to talk to the grand jury, and the grand jury can work something out because that's their power and authority. But these prosecutors don't have the lawful right. By the way, they have no rights at all. They have rights just like you and I have rights. But in their power and authority, they have power, and it's restricted power. It's restricted authority, and it's a particular jurisdiction that we've given them, and they must maintain their authorities and powers within that jurisdiction, and they can't go outside of it. They can't change the law. They can't make these things up as they want. You know, every judge makes his own rules. I was blown away some years back when I found that out. I couldn't believe it. You know, you got these rules that are put out by the legislators, okay? Actually, it's put out, well, legislators empower the courts to make rules. And it's usually the Supreme Court that makes the rule, you know, in the case of the U.S. Supreme Court, or the case of the highest court in the state. They're supposed to come together according to the way they worked it out to make the rules. But they don't have that power and authority. Not at all. And they use the rules to abrogate all the powers of the people. All the writs of the power of the people they have abrogated. And they have abrogated our founding documents. And they placed us under civil law. And that's civil law is Babylonian law. It's the law of the city. It's the law to control and to fleece the people. Keep the sheeple in line. And we need to break away from that. And the only way you can break away from that is through knowledge. All right, I've been long enough on that, but I think it was important to bring those points up. And again, I'm not going to be able to... I'll write some papers, but I'm probably not going to be able to do much with it until maybe next month, unless people send some money in for me to be able to do it, because things are very tight, you know. Okay, you said you had another question or two, Jan?
No, John, I said that I had sent emails to the people that submitted them because they were very long and kind of disorganized, asked them to reframe them.
Right.
You know, make
yeah,
it,
I'm going to be talking.
Your point and then send us a question with it.
All right, I talked with John about this, and he's been talking with Sheriff Dar, and you know, we'll give Sheriff Dar the entire 2 hours. So I'll probably take the first half hour, maybe, you know, do some Bible reading and maybe answer some questions that have come up for us to talk about, and so maybe the first half hour, you know, I'll maintain. But after that, we'll give Dar the rest of the time. We're here for 2 hours. We'll give him an hour and a half. He's not only just going to take questions through email. It's going to be an open forum. People are going to be able to ask questions, and I'm sure he'll have some things to say and things that he's doing. I'm not sure. Got to work that out. But I've been talking with John about this, and we're hoping to get something going in the next couple of weeks, maybe. It'll be at least 2 weeks, maybe even three, I don't know, but it's going to be at least 2 weeks away. So want to make note of it tonight that anybody has any questions, send it to Sheriff Dar. In the subject matter, put questions for Sheriff Dar, okay? Otherwise, we'll presume it's questions for me to respond to. Send it to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. And again, in the subject matter, put in for Sheriff Dar. But we also will be taking live communications. It'll be a regular open forum. With that, let's see if there's anybody in the queue. I know I saw one person in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. And if you're on an app or browser, there should be a button. So we do have a few people in the queue, so we'll start there. And like I said, next week I think I'll read this letter. It's a very short letter. It's a sickening letter. I almost threw up on it. It's horrific. I don't think I should even say the words. It's horrific. Let's leave it that way. But I think I'm going to read that letter, and hopefully by next week I'll have the response to that letter for resubmitting and sending it to them. And if they reject it again, then an indictment is in order. Okay, we'll take our first caller here. let's see. It looks like Mike. Maybe you could tell us what state you're from, Mike. You got the mic. Go right ahead. You're unmuted. What state you're from?
All right, sounds good there, John. Good to hear from you, Mike. Again, from up here in Michigan. I talked to you about maybe a month and a half or so ago. Probably you remember me and stuff. So, yeah, good to hear you guys. I've been missing you guys the last few weeks. Been busy, busy. School's letting out and stuff's wrapping up. And finally reminded myself to get in here tonight because I've got an issue again and I need some help. That would be with CPS because there were some allegations that were made against me. And I've had some very threatening, intimidating people I've had to deal with the last couple of days. And I told them, I said, you know what, you're violating my constitutional rights. No, we're not. We're doing our job. I believe you are. So it's time to blast these fools and put them on notice. I need to get your recommendation on how to do that, whether it be a writ or something like that, ?
Well, there are quite a few writs out there, and, you know, uh-huh. I've been applying writs, and they just ignore them. But I did have a federal judge told me, by the way, they've been abrogated, and he sent me to the they did this by rule, though. They overruled the law through rule. I mean, that's how bad it is, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, some years back I was caught up in this family court BS, you know, the mm-hmm. child services and the whole thing, you know, it was insanity. It went through a year of hell with these people. And mm-hmm. this was quite some time ago. You know, I was totally ignorant of the law. I didn't know anything back then. So I was just mm-hmm. kind of stuck in this whole thing. They stuck their nose into my home and my business for over a year and put a lot of fear in me. You're going to take my children and all this stuff. So I can appreciate the most evil courts in the United States, the most evil courts is the family courts. They are totally out mm-hmm. totally out of control, but they don't have any power. They don't have any authority, by the way. Are you in a family court or just through the administration that they're just giving you a hard time?
Well, they've been asking questions the last couple of days. I've dealt with them a few years or so ago, and I've learned a lot like you have. You know, ignorance of the law is no excuse, and, you know, my people perish because lack of knowledge. I've got your books, and it's forced me to re-educate myself the last few years. I've had that feeling in the pit of my stomach that I was always right, and once you read the books and stuff, I've got all your books, and it sets you straight to confirm that little feeling in the bottom of your stomach, that pit, that you've been right the entire time. We are sovereign citizens. We need to apply ourselves and remind them and put them on official notice. But like you said, some people just don't get it and stuff. But yeah, that's just how it is, and that's what I need to do. So that's why I was wanting to get your guys' two cents or recommendations for that. Over.
Well, if they're just coming in trying to get into your home and give you a hard time, you can just shut the door on them, tell them to take a hike. And even if they come with a police officer, you know, they better have a warrant, okay? Mm-hmm. And they better be signed. It's got to be a wedding signature with a sworn affidavit. The warrant on its own without a sworn affidavit it just doesn't work. You have to have
exactly. Both. It's hearsay.
So that you can do. Are you dealing with them from that perspective, or are you dealing with them from actually...
Well, the perspective, we finally sat down with them today to answer a few questions, to correct the record, to question them, you know, where did you get this from? Where did you hear it from? Well, we want to go ahead with counseling and all this other... But I'm like, wait a minute. That's a Fourth Amendment invasion. You're going to tell us what we're going to do in our house? Uh-uh. It's a usurpation of rights. It's a load of BS. I know better.
The key thing is, you want to see the law. And remember, statutes are not, okay?
Exactly.
What authority? You know, affidavits are law. If someone signs an affidavit that a child is being injured or something, or abused or something of that nature, well, that's the beginning of something. And I would never, ever, 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 I went to family court once. Of course, total ignorance, I didn't know. But I have learned over the years that I don't have to go to family court. I can deny them and take it right into the local courts, the Supreme Court in my case in New York. We call our state courts Supreme Courts. And then there's appellate process, the appeals and the appellate. But you'll have a better chance in that court than you will anywhere else, because at least they follow to some degree. Now, statutes can't be applied, and what statutes can they possibly apply against you? There's really nothing there for them to apply against you. But again, it's not the law. So I don't know exactly what the situation is, that I might be able to give you a little more thoughts or ideas.
Well, I can guarantee it's a violation of the United States Code, 18 U.S.C. 241 and 241, with the usurpation of rights, with the way that they've coerced, threatened, and intimidated my wife the last couple of days. They've got her petrified. I know better. They're not going to do that to me. And they've already violated our due process, because due process, due process, due process. I've heard you for the last couple of months since I've been donating $5 a month for coffee and stuff. It's just due process. It's what it is. And they've violated from the get-go. That's what they every time is, violate due process.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, they just come out and they... You know what I found many years ago? People who are abusing their children, they slam the door, tell them, get off my porch, or whatever the case may be, and they don't do anything. Those people seem to get away with it. It's the people that have nothing to hide. Maybe a claim is made and there's nothing there. Because we try to be nice and we try to answer them. Not anymore by me. I'll tell them to take a hike.
Exactly. That's what I've told them to do.
But if it's a homeschool situation, there is an organization. I forget what it is. I joined it. It was, I think, $100-$200 a year. And it's a group of lawyers that will take care of business if they come to your door to give you a hassle concerning your homeschooling. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's a homeschooling issue, but for anybody that is homeschooling their children, because they tell you once you join that organization or that club, whatever you want to call it, if they come knocking on your door, you have a phone number and there's always a lawyer on the other end of that to answer it. And you let them speak to the lawyer right there and then at your door. Hey, my lawyer's one. Yeah. And they'll tell them to go away. So, and that's a very powerful thing. Not that I like lawyers, use lawyers, but for that I did.
No.
I did. And I would still do it. My children are all out of school now, so, but I would do that because we homeschooled our children. But, you know, that's something to do. But, yeah, they abuse things, and, you know, I would just, you know, politely and nicely tell them, well, if you have anything, you got any sworn affidavits against me that I have to address, that's fine. Anything else, see you later. And if they come with a cop, they will try to do that. But even the cop, no, where's your warrant? You can't come into my home. Can't address nothing. Do you have sworn affidavits that something's going on here? I need to see that, and you need to have your warrant. And it's got to be a wet ink warrant with an affidavit. And then I'll address it. And then we'll address it not in the family court system. Take it right into the state court. Because the last place you want to be is in a family court. Those people are worse than traffic court. Everybody is guilty. Every child gets a lawyer. And the lawyers, they're all trying to win. They're not trying to do
anything. It's one big club, and you're not in it. I understand how they work.
So, I mean, without knowing any specifics or anything other than that, that's kind of my thoughts. Just be careful.
Yep. Sounds good.
Anything else?
Well, I appreciate the thoughts. You guys have a good night. Keep up the good work.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. We'll take our next caller, Terry, in a second here. Again, everybody wants to get into the queue, *601 if you're on a phone, and there should be a button if you're on an Apple browser. Terry, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys. Hey, this is I'm going to ask a question to everybody here tonight here, and I'd like to hear a response from, you know, Eric and Jan and anybody else that you want to have answer the question. But first, I was wondering if you could have Mike get a hold of me. There is a group called Justice Without Limits for Mike, and if he wants to call me or email me, if you want to give him my email. That's exactly. It's about 5,000 people. They meet on Sunday nights on a Zoom server, and it's all people that have had their kids kidnapped by CPS. And so they are on there. If you can get that to Mike.
If you want to send that information to us, we'll post it on our newsletter, and we'll put it up on the site too. That's a good
thing. But if you can give that to Mike here also.
Yeah, we will.
You've got my email there, right?
Jan, did you see Mike's email or Eric? Anybody see this? Well, we should have the list. We have the list anyway. I think he's...
Yes, John, I've got it.
Okay. Maybe you can get the information, Terry's information, his email. You can see it up there and get it out to Mike. And then Terry will send us that information. You know, that sounds like good support, people who are having problems. And we'll let them know if they want to come and learn the law. We'll help them teach the law also. You know, they can learn most of it for free, or they can take the course, or they can buy the books, you know. But anyway, Terry, what do you got?
So this is the question that I want to ask everybody here, and I also want this question to be asked, if you guys want to write it down here, for the sheriff here too. By the way, is that next week?
Well, it'll be a couple of weeks from now. And if you could send that question for the sheriff to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org.
I forwarded some questions. I don't know if you read them. I read them to mail. I sent it to you, and I sent it to Jan. So I sent the question three times.
Then we probably have them. But go ahead. What question do you have for us tonight?
So the question I have for everybody here are, what are the three orders mandated of the innocent?
Of the innocent mandated. Three orders mandated of the innocent. I personally don't know, but maybe you can school us on that. Eric or Jan, you guys know anything about that? I'm not sure what I know you used the word the innocent, and I'm not too sure exactly how to appreciate that. You're going to have to give us some kind of a meaning for that. I've never heard that term before.
Is that what you're asking?
Well, to you, yeah. I mean, maybe you can express more information on that.
The definition of innocent is a person who hasn't violated a right given to us by God, or, you know, has not done a wrong. And so the other instance of an innocent human being is somebody that has violated a right but has served their sentence. They are back to the status of innocent. So when it comes to sin, that's a different story, because everybody that is at the age of accountability has committed a sin here. And so I'm separating the definition of innocent between sin and crime. And there are two states of innocent. There's two ways to be innocent. You didn't violate a right, or you violated a right, committed a crime, and then you've served your sentence. So if you steal something here, you pay that back in double. Or if you've taken somebody's life, you go to jail for taking that person's life, etc. So that's my definition of the word innocent. That's the definition of the word innocent, not my definition. That's the definition of innocent. You have to know what an innocent person is, you have to know what a guilty person is, and you have to know what constitutes a crime in order to know what an innocent person is and a guilty person. And it's a violation of a right done with premeditation or done with willful intent, or the third category, which is the hardest one, done with major negligence. So those are the only three ways to commit a crime. Their laws are laws that actually violate the innocent. So when I say their laws, I'm referring to our servants' laws. Their laws to violate the innocent. They are literally writing laws to victimize the innocent. There is no such thing as a victimless crime. You are, if you're innocent and you are in a court and you're a defendant, or they're forcing you to make a payment, you are the victim. That's right. The definition of guilt, that's the definition of innocent, and that's the definition of a crime.
All right, well, we agree with that. You know, there is a common law phrase that we use concerning that. It's very, very simple. You've probably heard it many, many times. It's one of the people. Okay, because the people are the sovereign, and that's the key. We, the people, are the lawmakers. We, the people, ordained and established the law that they are to be obedient by. We established the amount of equity, or what they can write is what's called positive law. It's referred to as equity, but and equity is that which is right and just, and so it's positive law. Positive law is under the rule of the rules of nature and nature's God, so it's the rules of common law that equity is supposed to be under. But they've gone far away from that. But anyway, I use the word one of the people, or we the people, because that's what we are. And again, that we're the people are the sovereign. They have unalienable rights that cannot be violated, and we are the lawmakers.
Different
story.
We the innocent people, and then there's we the innocent servants, and then I also use the fact that their job is to defend the innocent, not to victimize the innocent. So, I mean, I'm kind of answering my own question here, but I'll go. You had asked what innocent was. Innocent is sovereign. They're both the same. A sovereign citizen or a sovereign servant is somebody that is an innocent person. There's only two statuses. You're either innocent or you're guilty of committing a crime. And so the innocent cannot commit a crime. It's impossible for an innocent person to do harm to another person, a place, or thing. An innocent person cannot commit a crime. An innocent person is innocent. So when they're going through and you have not violated a right, there's no way for you to be guilty. So what they're doing is they're perjuring themselves in order to victimize the innocent. There is no such thing as a victimless crime. It's impossible. The innocent are always innocent until they violate a crime or they serve their sentence or their penance. And so
a lot of people aren't familiar with that phrase, though. That's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I think it's much more powerful because, you know, when you say we're one of the people or we are the people, you know, it extends further than just being innocent. It extends to being the lawmaker. It extends to be sovereign. It extends to be the authority, the decider, the decision maker. You know, we are, of course, the king's bench. And the king of our court is Jesus Christ, because we're a Christian nation founded on biblical principles and founded on the Bible. The Bible was in the school until 1963, until they ripped it out. And well, now they got the Quran there, but that seems to be okay with these people. But in any event, you know, But I hear what you're saying. I understand.
Are you arguing that the innocent can commit a crime?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Are you arguing that the innocent can commit a crime?
Well, if you're innocent, you didn't commit a crime.
You can't commit a crime.
Well, but then you're no longer innocent.
Right, so the innocent cannot commit a crime. So therefore, if you're innocent, you didn't violate a right, it is the person that's going through and prosecuting you that is victimizing the innocent. They are going through and they're trying to convict an innocent person. They make you plead either guilty or not guilty to being innocent. And so I have pled in two cases, I have pled innocent. I said I've not violated a right, and they had no idea what I was talking about. The fact is, if you say you're a sovereign citizen, that sends them over the edge. So that's why I use the word innocent instead of you're right, a sovereign citizen is an innocent person. And a sovereign sheriff or a sovereign, anybody that's sovereign / innocent is a person that's following the law of God, the law of right.
Sheriffs are not sovereign, though.
They're innocent, they are, but there is no such thing right now as an innocent sheriff because they're not defending the innocent. They're the ones that are arresting and forcing the people that are innocent into courts.
Well, in their person, and yeah, they got a problem. But let me make the point here. It's an important legal point to be made here. Okay, and that is that nobody in elected office is a sovereign. Judges are not sovereign. Okay, none of them. They have powers. They have authority. They have jurisdictions that they act within. And we've given them, we've set up those jurisdictions, we've given them that power, we've given them that authority. Now, of course, they are sovereign people outside of when they're walking around without their badge and their gun, you know, well, even if you carry a weapon, many people carry weapons, so that doesn't matter. But if that person is not in there working at the time and they're regular people, then they're sovereign in their person. But once they act as a sheriff or a deputy to the sheriff, well, then at that point, they have power and authority. They're not sovereign. Because sovereign means you're 100%. You can't touch me. The only one that can touch me is God. That's what a sovereign is. But anyway, you mentioned that about three orders. I don't know if Jan or Eric knows what you're talking about. They want to respond, but maybe you can explain that to us. What are these three orders?
Okay, order number one, the innocent are to defend the innocent, not to prosecute the innocent. Number two, those that violate or victimize the innocent are the guilty, and those need to be punished. Number three is those that victimize the innocent need to give relief to those they victimize. That's number three. Those are the three orders of every public servant and of every judge. Any public servant, anybody that gets money from us is a public servant. So teachers are public servants. The postal servants are the postal service people are indirectly the city council. Everybody here is following the laws of man, the laws of servants. And so we need to start following the laws of God, the laws of right. Our rights are the laws of right. What is right is the law of right. We have the right to be born. We have the right to own property without our government writing laws that they can steal from us every year because we own property. We have the right to labor without anybody stealing that labor. That is slavery. Okay. That is what they're doing. Their income tax is not a tax. Income is theft. They're stealing your labor. They're saying every time we can take a certain percentage of your labor. That is forced slavery from conception until death. Is we are slaves to the guilty, our guilty servants. And so
also a violation of the Constitution called no direct tax, but go ahead.
Well, I put no stock into the Constitution. I put stock into Jesus Christ. I put stock into my rights that God gave me at conception. I put no stock into the Constitution. We have a state. Well, let me finish, John, and I'll let you say something here, unless you don't want me to finish.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I put no stock in the Constitution. I put no stock in the charters. Those are men corrupting the laws of God. The very first one that should be in the Bill of Rights should be the right to be born. That's got to be the very first one in there in the Constitution. the Constitution is just going through and recording what our rights are. And that's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. We have certain inalienable rights. And those rights are what is right. We have the right to own. We have the right to earn. Mm-hmm. We have the right to move any way on our own property. We have the right not to have anybody go through and trespass on our property. We have the right to have nobody take our property or a percentage of our property. We own that property, not our servants. And so that's what I'm saying with the three. Those are the three mandatory orders of every innocent human being, is to defend everybody else. Those servants, we just pay them to defend us. Our job, my job, is to defend you when you're innocent, John. If somebody's coming over to murder you, I should go through there and take my gun out and shoot that person so they don't murder you. We are all under that order. That order isn't just to the servants. That order, those three orders, that's to every human being on this planet. It's not just to the servants. We just pay them to do that. That's the three orders are from God.
Let me respond, because you've got a lot there, and I'd like to respond to some of that. You can say some more if you want. But You make the note that, you know, what did you say your position on the Constitution was?
The Constitution, all it is just the law of right existed long before any Constitution existed.
Let me respond then, because I don't think you really understand the Constitution. First of all, the Constitution was written by we the people. Okay, even the Declaration of Independence was declared by we the people. Okay, and exactly what you're saying is we the people put into law. We codified it in the foundation of our law, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right in the Declaration of Independence. We codified that we the people are under the laws of nature and of nature's God. That's all codified in the Constitution. The fact that we have the right to put off this government and put on new government, we codified that. You see, it's the people's law under God that God gave us that liberty to make that law to control our government. The government doesn't control us, although they do, because we live in a fiction and we've permitted them. We become sheeple, then we will remain sheeple until we become knowledgeable. So the thing is we empowered them with certain powers, certain authorities, and that's what the Constitution is all about. We gave certain powers to the legislators. We told them what they can do and what they can't do. We've given them 18 powers that they can write positive law. And positive law has got to be in line with God's law. In other words, under the rules of common law. And the rules of common law is simply this: common sense with an eye on justice. It's the same thing as common law. There's no difference. Rules generally are maxims, undeniable truths. All men are created equal. That's a maxim. You can't deny that. People will and do because they're morons or because they're evil and they just don't, and they try to confuse people. But it doesn't matter. It's still a maxim. And so, like, when we gave the people, you gave the government 18 powers, and that means that anything we didn't give them, they don't have that power. So when we gave the legislators these 18 powers to write positive law, law under the laws of nature and of nature's God, and we as people being, let's say we're a grand jury, and they bring some law up to apply against somebody, and we nullify that law because we didn't give them that power. We didn't give them the authority to write that law. Same thing in a court of law. If an individual committed a crime that's working for the government, or they're operating in commercial activity, interstate, for instance, commercial activity as far as the federal level is concerned, and they write some legislation which we empowered them to write, okay, but if it's not in line with the laws of nature and nature's God, then we the people can nullify that law in the jury. And again, the jury, if you go into Black's law, you go into Bouvier's law, okay, the jury is the king's bench, and it's 12 individuals, just like the 12 witnesses of Christ, the 12 apostles. It's the 12 witnesses, and it must be unanimous. All 12 has to say guilty. If one refuses to go guilty, then they got to let the person go. They can't go any further than that. They can't punish that person, because you have to have all 12 saying it. that person's guilty. And that's what we set up. Now, those people, again, are supposed to be being on the king's bench. The God said he wrote his laws. Again, we're under laws of nature, and nature's God. God said he wrote his laws into our hearts. We all know when a wrongdoing was done. That's why we're judged by our peers. We live in the same world. We operate in the same places. We go to the same places. We communicate with each other, okay? And the peers, our peers, as the king's bench, okay? Remember, the king's bench is Jesus Christ, and we're to do the will of the king in any decision we have in court. So we're to do the will. So we follow our heart, okay? And we look at things with a sense, with common sense. It's that simple, with maxims. And then we apply those things to whatever that case is about. We look at the facts, we make our judgments, and we make the decision on what the punishment should be. And it's almost always with an eye on restitution. You know, common law isn't about putting people in jail. You know, these laws that these people make, these statutes and regulations and stuff that they apply upon the people, okay, it's all about taking their money. It's all about putting them in jail. You know, when they put you in jail, they're making money off you again. It's all about money, all right? You see, and that's why that's called the law of the city. And that's why, you know, that's Babylonian law. That's where it comes from, Babylon, okay? Control the slaves, fleece the slave, keep them in order, control them. So, but you see, when you say the Constitution, you know, you don't have a good position on the Constitution. This is a powerful document that we, the people, wrote under being blessed by God. It's a liberty that we have to have government by consent. It's written right there in the Declaration. So when we look at, let's say, just the Constitution in the beginning, and we read, for instance, in the Constitution, let me see if I can get to the preamble. I'd like to just read the preamble straight out. Okay, because the preamble says everything. You know, anything they do, anything government does, has to fulfill one of these 6 points in the preamble, because that's what powers and authority we gave to these people. And it is we, the people, the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, that's number one, we wrote it to form a more perfect union, to establish justice, that's the number two, ensure domestic tranquility, that's number three. This is what they need to uphold and need to maintain and make sure that the people have these things. Provide for the common defense. Promote for the general welfare. Secure the blessings of liberty. It takes you right back to the Bill of Rights. To ourselves and our posterity. And we do ordain. We are the lawmakers. We are the ones who made the decision. We do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So they are supposed to be obedient. And then when you go through this, Article 1 is written for the power and authority of legislators. You know, each one of these articles is for the government. Article 2 is the powers and authority we gave to the executive power. And Article number 3 is the powers and the authority we gave to the judiciary. And we are very clear that it is law and equity, but they apply civil law, which has all kinds of statutes and traffic violations and all these things, okay? We never gave them power ever, nor can we give them the power to control our behavior. That's our job. It's our job to control our behavior, okay? Now, if you're doing something and it's putting people in jeopardy, of course, it's the duty of the law enforcer and even the code enforcer to do something to protect the individuals that may be, you know, may get injured by whatever it is that this person's doing that's wrong, okay? They don't need a statute to do that. It's just common sense. Like you said, if someone is coming to take my life, you have every right to protect my right by shooting that person if that's what's necessary, okay? So all the things you're talking about is in here. And it is written from us to them, we're the lawmakers. And then we make the law up as we go. We pull it right off the air as we move along. We just make it up, okay? As long as it is just and right and it is common sense, that's the law. That's the laws of nature and of nature's God. It doesn't get any more difficult. So you should reconsider your position and take a look at, you know, you can take our course on the Constitution. We have a simple course. You can take it for free up online here. But if you got a final thing, go right ahead, and then we'll move to the next person.
Terry, he had to step out for a minute, but this is his wife.
What's your first name?
Mary is my name, Mary. So basically, if we don't know that we are innocent, then we are always going to be ruled by the guilty.
Well, that's true. That's why if we don't understand that we're sovereign, then you're absolutely right. We're going to be ruled by the guilty. We're going to be ruled by the evil.
Which is why it is really important to know what innocence is and what guilty is, because otherwise we're always going to be ruled by the guilty.
I agree with you, and we're saying the same thing. It's just we're using different words. I'm using more lawful words, and you're using more logical words. But even the lawful words are logical, because it's common sense. But yeah, I agree with that. There's no doubt about it. All right, well, we're going to move to the next call, unless you have a something quick, because it's...
That was it.
We got other people too. That was it?
Hang on just a minute. Give me just a second here.
Yeah,
I'm coming. Yeah, Terry's right here. Okay, Terry, did you have one last thing to say?
Us old guys don't have very good bladders. I apologize.
All right, well, if you got a final point, because we do have other people in the queue here.
I'm not trying to hog, and I apologize. If I took up too much of your time, I apologize, then I will say nothing more.
If you get a good conversation, we get a good conversation, you know? So, but if you want to have a final word, you can just have a final word, and then we'll move to the next person.
Yeah, my wife made the point. If we the innocent, don't know who we are, we will always be ruled by the guilty, which is exactly what the condition of America is right now.
I'll put it in a different word, saying the same thing you're saying. If we, the people, do not know that we are the king, that we are the sovereign, that we are the lawmakers, and therefore being the innocent, that we have unalienable rights, then we'll be abused. So again, it's just a different way of saying the same thing. But the way I'm saying it is more understood into the court system.
Laws of right, God does, is what I'm saying. That's one. I'll finish with that.
Yeah, the laws of right is the laws of nature, and nature's God. It's just another way of saying it.
No, the laws of right are written on our hearts at conception. The law of right is all of our rights. The laws of wrong are written by man. It doesn't matter whether they're a servant or they're not a servant. The people that aren't servants are also people that write the laws of wrong. When you go murder somebody or you go and rob from somebody, that's you're violating the law of right. And you're following the law of wrong. It doesn't matter whether the servants do it or whether it's us, we the people. We the people are either innocent or we the people are guilty. You punish the innocent, you defend the innocent, and you punish the guilty. So they're writing laws of wrong, and we as people, just an individual, if we write a law of wrong, we're going over to steal something from somebody. They're just making it legal to rob us, and they're making it legal to murder the innocent, and they're making it legal to make us slaves. And so they're just people like us. We're all people. You're either innocent or you're guilty. There's no in between. You are not. You can't be half pregnant.
I think we both have made enough of our points.
I'm not making any points. I'm discussing what the truth is. I'm not making a point.
And that, but I wouldn't go into court and make my position that way, because they're not really understanding it. You're going to have to define it. You see, the words that I use are defined. They're already defined in a legal sense, been there for hundreds of years. You find it in Black's law. You find it in Bouvier's law. Okay? They're just well-defined words, and they have a meaning and a substance, and it's clear. Okay? It's clear. When you bring a word up that's not in the legal realm, and there are plenty of words to be used for the innocent, by the way you defined it, okay? They don't understand it. But with that, I got to move on to the next person. Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Okay. Okay, Ross, you got the mic. How you doing, Ross?
You can't hear me?
I can hear you.
Was looking on, asked some questions about a process. If you don't want to be under statute, you have to unregister yourself from under the statute.
If you don't want to be under the statute, do you unregister yourself under the statute?
Yes, yes.
Well, they're not going to permit you to do that, but I do that all the time when I go into the court. You know, I make it clear that I'm not under their rules, nor am I under their statutes or any kind of a regulations. That's written for them and not for me. And but they ignore that. And again, they'll continue to do that until enough people step up and say enough is enough. But in order to step up and say enough is enough, you have to have knowledge. So we have to have enough educated people to do that. And let me make one final point on that. You know, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And I've made this mention numerous times. I think I made it last week. Every county is controlled by four individuals. And every state ultimately is controlled by four individuals that control the four individuals in every county, okay? And then it goes even right up to the federal level where they have a small group of people that control and bring things all the way down the line. It's all controlled. It's all statutory. They write their own rules, and they exercise them as law. And that is evil, and you're right, it has nothing to do with us. The problem is they got the guns, and everybody thinks what they're doing and saying is the law and is the right thing. We're living in a fiction.
Because when we sign up to the fill out the legal forms that government gives you to, like, do the driver's licenses and all that kind of thing, you are signing up to be registered as a illegal motor vehicle driver.
Well, the problem is that they put us in a box that we can't climb out of. And again, the only way we're going to climb out of this is for enough people to step up, take control and power and authority and exercise their unalienable rights within their counties through committees of safety. And until the people do that, and enough committees of safety are moving through this nation, we're not going to gain back our laws. We're not going to gain things back. They have set up a system where everybody gets a Social Security card. And, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I didn't get a Social Security card when I was born. I had to go down and get one when I wanted to go do my first job. I think I was 10 or 11 years old. I went down to get a Social Security card because I was trained that way to begin with. But I couldn't work without a Social Security card. No one would hire me. You know, I worked for a butcher, I worked for a delicatessen, I worked for a grocery store. And, you know, when I was 11, 12, 13 years old. But I wouldn't be able to get hired unless I had my Social Security card. And back in those days, you still need what was called working papers. I don't know if they still do that. Today, they give children their Social Security cards as soon as they're born. You get a Social Security number. But you also, you know, you can't open a bank account without a Social Security number. You can't open a bank without ID, and they want a state ID. And once you go down there and get your state ID, you know, then you become, especially if it's a license, then you become stuck in their system. And they'll put you in jail if you drive without a license, okay? But the right to travel is an unalienable right. Instead of horses, we have cars. And you can't license someone to be able to travel. I heard a judge say to someone one time, well, you have a right to travel, you just don't have a right to drive. So I'm going to walk 20 miles to work every day? Is that what you're saying, Judge? Are you serious? I'm going to walk? Well, you take a bus. Well, I don't live in a city or anything where there are buses. There are no buses here. How do I get to work? You just taking my work away from me? See, they put us in a box, okay? I do have a license because I don't have a choice. I have a Social Security card because I don't have a choice. Okay? Go ahead.
Yes, they do have a process. You can register yourself. The problem, if you go through that unregistering process, then we resist you to go through that process.
Right. Yeah,
they don't want to lose their power over you.
Well, exactly. Yeah, they get perturbed when you question their authority and you let them know that they don't have that power and authority that they're exercising. Boy, do they go crazy on that. You know?
They're
very careful because they'll put you in jail.
Yeah, so they take all authority away from us and claim it's theirs over all authority.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, again, the only way we're going to straighten these things out is for the people to get educated, step up, exercise their unalienable right of government by consent by being involved in their counties. And you see, once you're involved in your county, you're dealing with every person that you elect in office in your county, whether it's whether it's your congressman or your senator on the federal level, which senators should be the states, we shouldn't be voting for them, or whether it's the mayor or the town board or village board or whatever the case may be, even the school boards. Okay. We have power and authority over all of them. We can get rid of them. The people can work together. Like I said, 15, 20, 30 people on a county can get rid of any school board they want. If they're not doing the will of the people, when these people go up there and they complain and to these people that are on the board and they sit up there and they do what they want anyway, the people don't know that they can just pull them off. They can get rid of them. We can pull them out of power. Okay, we can recall them. We can give them a writ quo warranto, although they have abrogated them under rules on a federal level anyway. But that still brings us to the state level. So they haven't done it on the state level unless they have. One of the things I looked into recently, okay, was I was looking for laws by the Supreme Court concerning the authority and when that authority was given that the grand jury cannot indict without a signature of a prosecutor. Go figure that one out. You want to talk about power and authority taken from the people? Right there. Okay? Well, you know, U.S. versus Williams, there's so much in there that denies that to begin with. But I also found that there are state Supreme Court decisions, okay, that have already said that authority is not given. You can't give that authority. That belongs to the people, okay? And then you can tie that on the federal level. You can tie that to the Constitution, where full faith and credit is given from each state, okay? So that's one of the arguments I'm going to be making on this paper that I spoke about earlier, that this office of the clerk from the Supreme Court send me that letter telling me how rules, I have to obey their rules, and their rules require that I have our grand jury indictment or grand jury presentment, okay, must have a signature of a prosecutor, okay? And that's only started, that started back in, I'm very confused on this because my research brought me to 1946, but the rules didn't come to play until 1948. Okay, now I got to look. I got the numbers and everything. I got to go look and see how those dates. They claim that date is 46, when they didn't get the rules out until 48. The authority was given by the legislators in 34. But anyway, they're against themselves. Okay. They've taken the rights of the people. They've taken our rights of writs. They've taken our rights of the grand jury. They've taken our rights of the trial jury. They've taken our rights of due process. They've taken all your rights. They've taken and trampled upon the founding documents. They deny Christ. They deny the Bible. Okay? This is a huge, huge problem. People need to wake up and do something about this. Trump can't fix this problem. He could set the stage. He can't keep it. It's just like what Benjamin Franklin said to an individual at some point in time when they discovered on the government, what kind of government do we have? Well, it is a republic if you can keep it, because you can't keep it if you're ignorant. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be, Thomas Jefferson. So people have to do this. They have to get involved.
Yes, John Drash.
Yep, go ahead.
I think also we need to eliminate the Civil Procedure Act, too.
The which act?
The Rules of Civil Procedure.
The Seizure Act? I didn't get that.
Civil. cathedral. Devil.
Huh? Spell it. Spell it first.
C-I-V-I-L.
Devil.
Yeah. Cathedral, I need to go.
Yeah, well, civil law, again, is Babylonian law. They claim that we are under Roman law, okay, which we're not. We're under the laws of nature's God. We're under the law set up by Israel. Our nation was governed and created as Israel was created in 1400 B.C. Okay, I think it was 1400. But in any event, they claim that we're under civil law from Rome, and that we're created and as Rome was created, because they have a Senate and I don't know what else they had, but they had the senators. You know, the fact of the matter is that Roman law is Justinian law, okay? Roman law is just repackaged Justinian law. Justinian law is just repackaged Babylonian law. So it gets its root from Babylon, okay? So from Babylon to Justinian to Roman law, to civil law in the United States. That's where we're at. But that's what the people want, because they're not denying it, and they're not stepping up and saying no. And the reason is they're not educated well enough to understand and know. They live in a fiction that they think this is the way it is. You know? So you're told a lie long enough, you believe it. If you're taught the lie, you believe it. You know?
Yes. The problem, when they pass that, they also blur the lines between the code of equity with the code of law,
right,
as one.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, they do call it equity, okay? And the problem with that is equity cannot be separated from justice, you see? And so they're calling it justice when in fact it's unjust or unjust. You know, it's not justice at all, okay? They just play war games with words, you know. They call us sovereign citizens, and that means, and what that means is, it's already defined in police magazines, and what a sovereign citizen is a cop killer. That's what a sovereign citizen is. So.
I know.
All right, Ross, I got to move on. More people.
I yield.
All right, thank you. Okay, let me take next call. Let's see, John from Michigan. How you doing, John? You got the mic. Go right ahead.
I'm well. Hey, I think I can explain a little bit about what the problem is. I mean, I don't care what kind of sheriff or whatever you got, but I mean, a sheriff has to wear two hats. He has the people he's dealing with. He also deals with the companies, the corporations, all of the artificial persons, and that's so the Constitution. What they're doing is not unconstitutional. It's just being applied to us, the people. Okay, it's absolutely necessary for them to have rules and regulations for corporations.
You're absolutely right. I agree with you, and I didn't think of it from that perspective. The he must apply equity or the legislative law upon those who are subject to it, which, of course, is commercial activity and also is anybody working for the government, whereas they can't apply it to us. But
right.
Focus is...
And what you'll find is that all these laws they write, because they have an absolutely duty to write these laws to regulate that which they create, which are artificial entities. They have to do that. That's what their job is. They just can't apply it to the men and women. And if you look at all those laws, they have definitions in all those laws, and it talks about the all persons, most of those things, all persons doing this or all persons doing it. And they will define the terms in the laws, and persons are individuals, they're corporations, they're all this stuff. And when you say that individuals, an individual has to be within the scope of what the definition is, and therefore it would be an individual corporation, it would be an individual public servant. It does not, and I defy you to see it anywhere, it does not say man or woman.
Right.
And what we are is we, the people are men and women. They're not persons. Persons is a legal term. Now,
that's
the Constitution.
That's absolutely Absolutely. I know you made that point to me before, and it's an absolutely true, because they've turned, they use the word person to be a fiction, a corporation.
That's exactly what it is. And so what kind of English are they speaking when the judge says, do you understand? I said, heck no, I don't understand. Who are you talking to? Do you realize who you're talking to? You know, what is your name? Well, it's Judge so-and-so. No, what is your name? Well, it's Judge. Did your mother name you Judge? No, my name is John J. Judge, you know, whatever it is. And you talk to him back in that name, you know, okay, John Smith. You know, who do you think you are? Who do you think you're talking to? You work for me. This is my court. I paid for it.
Right. It's under USC 26 that does the definition of the meaning of words, and they move that into all of, like for instance, USC 18, USC 28. You know, they use those definitions from USC 26, and it defines the person ultimately as a corporation.
Exactly, and they're treating us as corporations.
Right.
That's exactly what's happening. You know, and I know these people talk about the man on the land and stuff like that. But all those people, if you look at that, look at your invoices, your bills from the companies, the corporations, your water bill, your electric bill, stuff like that. It'll be in your all capital name.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and look at your birth certificate or certificate of live birth in its upper lower case. So you're dealing with two different things. Are you dealing with a corporate person? And you're dealing with the flesh and blood person. Now, if you can pinch it and it hurts, that's a flesh and blood person, and those things don't apply. That's what the problem is in this thing's the Constitution. That one guy was talking about that, the law of the innocent, stuff like that. And I have no idea what he was talking about on that thing or where that was listed or whatever like that.
You know, he's using logic, and it doesn't apply in the law realm, so to speak. Common law has its own language, and it's very precise and specific, and the meanings last for a very long time. In order to change a meaning of a word, for instance, in Black's Law Dictionary, it might take 50 years or even more to try to change the meaning. And they have changed meanings in Black's Law. You know, I use... the third and the second. I got both the second and the third. I put them both up online. People can download them. But then you go into the fourth and the fifth and the sixth. I don't remember how far they go. I think they're up to the eighth, if I recall. But every time they come up with that new edition, they find a little word and they give it a little tweak. They try to make the change. And so you don't have the normal understanding of the word in the later editions as you do in the early editions. And that's why they do the same thing with the Supreme Court rulings. They don't like those early decisions because they were pretty rock solid in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, where today it's fugazi, or it's unlawful in most cases with these decisions that these people make in the Supreme Court. I wouldn't say a lot. Well, I guess quite a bit anyway. Yeah, they make a lot
right.
of bad.
Well, the thing, like I say, the Constitution, like you mentioned that, and basically it's a employee's guide, employee handbook. That's all it is.
Yes.
We had this nation we set up, and we said, okay, how are we going to rule it? And so we made a handbook for our employees. This is what you do. This is how you start. And then you go on through there. And all the things that they write, they don't apply to the man or the woman. They apply to the public servants, and they apply to them. And then it finally got down to the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights, it lists a bunch of specific rights, but the Ninth Amendment says if we don't mention them, they're included. And there's thousands and thousands and thousands of rights, and it's all common law rights. And the Tenth Amendment says if we forgot anything, you can't do that either.
That's right.
That's exactly what it says.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, look at these people. They're really out there. Well, I lost my train of thought, what I wanted to say. But anyway, back to you.
Well, all I'm just saying is that everybody talks about this unconstitutional and due process. Corporations don't have due process. They got to be fair. I know in Michigan Constitution, it talks about there's.
Well, they have equity. It's called positive law. Still
exactly.
Under the law of nature's God, and it must make sense. Okay, that's all it is.
Equity, but all I'm just saying is that the corporations that come into existence, they pay the state to have limited liability. That's what all corporation is. They don't have to be responsible for what they do. They want to have limited liability, and that's all it is. And of course, the state is going to regulate that which they create, but they don't create the men or women. And look at any law. I defy you to find almost any law that specifically says man or woman. In Michigan, they have several, so they know how to do it. They know how to do it, and it's mostly with like indecent exposure and stuff like that, or a marriage. They define it as a union between a man and a woman. So there are several laws that mention men and women. So we know they know how to write it if they want to include that. But well, part of the law is if they don't.
When you go back to the Bible, which is the law of the land, ultimately it talks about a man and woman marriage in that way, and
right.
It's an abomination for two men doing unseemly things or two women the same thing. It's an abomination to the Lord. That's the law. That's the laws of nature's God. You know.
Right, right. But the bottom line is in law, if it's when you see something that says, all right, the this thing shall include, and it lists a bunch of different things. If it's not in there, it's not included. Okay, it's not. It doesn't say it. Okay, and in the law, they presume that they know what to do when they write the law, and when they had to have men or women, they put it in there. By golly, they do. And so they know how to write the laws as if they apply to the men or women. They don't because they do not apply. And those laws and rules that they do, they apply to them. They apply to the corporations. They apply to that which they create, and also applies to anybody that will volunteer and do it. Okay, and my, and that's exactly what you're saying. We have to educate the people to know that they don't have to volunteer because they don't work for the government. The government works for them.
Right. It's called Nisi Prius, and Nisi Prius is unless first, and unless first means unless you agree to be under this. In other words, you agree to be under these particular rules or these particular regulations and statutes if you are operating and doing a certain commercial activity or working for a certain government agency, then that's Nisi Prius. You agreed to the terms of the contract or the agreement, whatever you want to call it, to work under those regulations. And then there are penalties that you can lose your job and so on and so forth. But I remember what I wanted to make, the point I wanted to make, you know, we've given the power and the authority to the legislators, of course, and we've written down very specifically what their powers were. And they, in turn, take those powers that they were given, and they write under their authority, under their power, what is the regulation or the statute controlling a particular situation, commercial or governmental. And that has to be, there's got to be rules, there's got to be regulations. The same thing to keep our government in line, there's got to be rules, there's got to be statutes. And that's what we wrote. It's called the founding documents. It's called the Declaration of Independence, the law of the land, which is the foundation of our law, the Constitution, which is the framework of the powers and the authorities we've given, and the capstone Bill of Rights, which is the ruler over it all. If you violate any of these rights and anything you're doing, well, that's unlawful. And so we need this Constitution. We need the Declaration of Independence, the foundation of our law, written down. We codified it. It had to be codified. We need to know it. We need to execute it and apply it upon these people to control them. As Jefferson put it, chain them down, bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. But the people aren't doing that because they don't know how. Okay, and that's what we're trying to teach.
They're volunteering. We volunteer. We buy a marriage license. We buy a driver's license. We do all these different things, and we pay for that for them to rule over us. But they don't have the authority to rule over men and women. All those rules they have, the Constitution doesn't apply to us. It's our rule book for them. It's our rule book for them. And if we do volunteer, by golly, they'll take advantage of it and say, well, yep, you said you're going to do that, so we're going to punish you for it. And that's exactly what they do. And that's exactly what they've done. It drives me nuts, but I mean, understand this. I don't care what kind of sheriff you got. I don't care what kind of county commissioner or senator or whatever like that. If they say something about the rules and they apply to you, I want to say, show me where. Show me where it says you got that right to rule over man or woman, okay, because it's not there. And that's what everybody's volunteering. We're all volunteering. We're volunteering to pay taxes. It's infuriating when you really think about it.
The top of this is we volunteer with a gun to our head.
Oh, yeah. I've been there. I've been there. I've been there. Yeah. I'll yield, but I'm just saying, it's just, you know, the guy that was talking earlier, I mean, I don't know if he realized it or not, but he's talking about the law of the innocent. I don't know where that came from. But all that was doing to me, I was scratching my head and said, what in the blazes is he talking about? That's just the common law. You know, you have the right to be born, but as you mentioned, you know, in Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and a pursuit of happiness, that covers every one of those three things he's talking about.
Absolutely. Yep, yep. And, yeah. And preamble, too. Blessings of liberty.
I mean, the right to live, that's the right to, you know, life, right? Liberty, that's the right to do whatever you want to do. That could be traveling, whatever he was speaking of in there. And a pursuit of happiness, what makes you happy? If it's religion, it's whatever it is, you have that right, and it's God-given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and pursuit of happiness, that could be applied towards traveling, too, because I'm a happy person if I can drive to work in 15, 20 minutes, in opposed to walking to work and taking, I don't know, 3 hours, and then walking home.
I understand that. We're talking about terms and stuff like that. Traveling is a right. You have a right to travel. Driving is a privilege. But driving, by definition, is doing something commercially. Now, if, you know, I have a right to travel in my own vehicle, stuff like that, but when I'm driving a corporate truck working for the corporation, that's right. Driving. That's regulatable. It has to be. It has to be. So people
That's true. I never looked at it from that perspective, the difference between driving and traveling.
You know, I mean, if you're driving a big semi and stuff like that, and it's you're hauling goods and services on the road for a profit, that has to be regulated. And right. You have to have a regulated person driving that vehicle. They have to
We have to write the powers and authority to write for them to write the legislation to control that commercial activity. Again, that's how important the Constitution is. We can't just push it aside. It has to be applied.
Right. But if you don't want to drive, you know, purchase your own vehicle, and then you have to look at the terms and definitions of vehicles and this commercial and stuff like that. But you know, if you're hauling your own goods on your own vehicle on your own roads, public service, that's not regulatable. But if you're hauling somebody else's goods for profit and gain on the road using the public right of way for profit and gain, you're darn right that's regulatable, and you better have a license.
Right.
You know, it's true.
I agree with it absolutely. And I have a license because I don't want to go to jail.
It's interesting. In Michigan, the Michigan Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, right at the very start, says all, capital A-L-L, all political power resides in the people. Now, if all of it resides in the people, how much is left? And the answer is none. And how much power does the legislature have then? None.
Right.
They can't regulate the people. None. Right. I mean, all. I don't know if people understand English, but all means everything.
That's right. Agreed.
And governments are instituted to protect those rights, but we don't give them the power. We give them the authority to regulate that which they create, but they don't create us. That I guess that's my point here is it all these everybody's complaining about this, that, and the other thing, but all of us volunteer. We want to take advantage of all these beautiful things that are available. But sometimes that all comes with a price. It all comes with baggage to it. So, you know, it'd be nice if we could all live just by ourselves and maybe just our family and stuff like that. But by golly, you know, if you want to associate with other people and do some other things, a lot of times what happens is you have to give up something to do that, and that's exactly what we're up to. So I don't know what the answer is. I wish I did. But the bottom line is on the thing is that. You know, those laws that we write don't apply to us. I mean, the common law applies to us, and common sense applies to us. And
right. Well, it's directly to the individuals. It's directed to the legislators, directed to the administrative, and it's directed to the courts. Mm-hmm. And so, again, since we've written and given them the powers, how is it that we have to bend the knee to them to execute one of our own powers?
We don't.
And I think I'm able to write a powerful letter concerning that to go back to these people. And you know, the other thing is this presentment is more than a presentment. It's a demand. It's even more than a demand because it is alerting the highest court in the land. Because and the law requires it that if a person is aware of a conspiracy, okay, if a person is aware of a conspiracy against the government of the United States, It is demanded upon you to report it to some judge or governor or the president. Okay, you are. And if you don't,
it's treason not to.
You can held guilty of it.
Yeah.
So I mean, and that's the one of the other points I got to be made. And again, you know, when they don't have the authority or the power to reject the paperwork, whether it's
right.
a present or whether it's just a letter laying out the subversion against the United States of America, and reporting it accordingly, they by law have to receive that. They cannot remove that document from the court system in this case that we're filing it. I mean, we got plenty of laws on that, statutes that control that. You know,
he's treating you like a person. He's treating you like us, like individuals or like corporations. That's exactly.
Well, I'm going to read this next week, and you'll see how what he really is treating me like or treating us like. You know,
I'd like to hear that. Yeah. One other thing, I'll let somebody else on everything, but I mean, it's to talk about common law, so people understand this. You talk about the maxims of common law; those are self-evident truths, correct?
For instance,
just more really simple: when you step off a building, do you fall up or down?
That's the law.
No, it's true. That's the common law. That's the law of nature. You fall down.
Common sense, too. Yeah.
Well, think about that. I mean, you know, innocent until proven guilty. The guy was talking about the law of innocence. Innocent until proven guilty is a maximum of common law. And there's thousands and thousands and thousands of them, and it's all common sense. A man is worth his hire, right? Thou shalt not steal. All those things are all common law.
Absolutely.
It's there.
Well, let me digress a minute. I just real quick on this letter. I'm not going to read it now, but on this letter, you know, it was laid out as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, okay, and it has a foreman, okay, with a signature. It doesn't spell out the name of the foreman, but it has a signature of the foreman there, okay? And in the letter that this guy writes back, he says, "Dear Miss," not Mr., but it shouldn't be either of those things, "Dear Miss NLA," because, you know, when I sent this paper in and the address, it's the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, care of NLA, you know. But they know what they're doing. They know. I got to believe they at least read the paper, you know, because it was very powerful in the beginning and it should have drawn them in. And they saw the danger of it. They can't have that paper go in because then they'll have to fix the courts. They can't do
that. It's the status quo. They're defending the status quo. You're right. Right.
And that's another.
At some point in time, they're going to have to be tried and convicted of treason and hung. And after about 25 or 30 of them are hung, there's going to be a great coming to Jesus moment all over the place.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that's true. They're maintaining the status quo. Hey, listen, we're running out of time. We have another person in the queue. So
I'll let you go. I'll yield. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Right,
okay. We'll take our last caller here. Linda from Virginia, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
I'm calling because I'm one of the innocents.
Uh-oh. Okay.
And I'm looking for retribution, restoration, and what's the other one? settlement, anyway. So I have the case where I tried to buy all I did was try to buy a furnace, an HVAC system, and got ensnared by these predators and entrapped in a horrible situation. Within 4 days, I canceled the contract, and I told them to come and remove.
I remember the whole story. So, but where are you at this point? What are you?
I filed complaints with the governments. I did a notice and demand, the verified notice and demand.
Right.
Gave them 30 days.
Okay.
There was no response.
So they then defaulted. Go ahead.
The only response I'm getting from them is they say that they will remove the system when I sign documents. And at first I said no, and they came back again. So I said, okay, I said, send the documents. And the documents turned out to be hold harmless and non-disclosure.
Let me confirm something that you have said in the past, make sure we got it right, that you never paid them any money.
Not a penny.
And nobody wherever they tried to get their money from, which they set up a loan system is what they did, okay, they haven't tried to charge you any payments back on that loan.
Well, wait a minute. He talked me into, when he made that initial visit, he talked me into a no-interest loan. At first I said, no, I don't need it, because I had multiple offers on no-interest loans, and I have a very high credit score.
So are you paying on the loan?
Huh?
Are you paying on the loan?
Oh, they gave me a no-interest loan, so technically...
Are you paying payments now?
Technically, you don't have to make payments. You just have to pay it off in full within 12 months.
Okay, so then you're being held on the wire for this. Okay, I told you, here's the key thing. You've done everything you needed to do, and your next step is to take it into court, okay, and try to push for a default. And even if they don't accept a default, because these are bar attorneys and they don't understand the law. They understand statutes, but they don't understand the law. Okay, but then you may not be able to get that done that way. So, but if you could still write up, if you write your paper up correctly, you know, admit and deny, lay out your story, and they have to admit and deny. If they don't admit and deny to something, then they agree to whatever it is that you wrote, and they're defaulting to those things. And that can bring you a summary judgment. And the key thing is you can't just sue that individual or that group of individual, whoever they are, the corporation. You have to also sue the financial institution, the people who put the money out. Because this is the most important point. This is the most important part. You see, and I explained this to you before, but this is the most important part. You see, you have to tie in all people involved. If you're not, your case could be thrown out by the other side for failing to bring in a necessary, individual.
To all four parties.
Here is the main point. This is the key, okay? Because this is how you win. You're going to win this because you never really signed anything. And even if you did, the check doesn't... I'm telling you, I 40 years as a contractor, a general contractor, okay? And I'm telling you, money does not go to the contractor. It either goes to the individual or it goes to a dual party, your signature and their jury. Have them produce the check. Who signed that check? That's what you need.
I still need to do that. I do have that on the list. Here's the thing, John. They forged my signature. Honestly, I went to Catholic school. The penmanship is the most important thing to them. And I have a unique signature. And their little scrawl of a signature, it's forged.
Yeah.
And they... And the other thing they did was when he had that tablet and he handed it to me, I thought it was for a credit check. And I signed. Well, they took that signature and copy and pasted it to other pages.
Yeah. You see, first of all, you know, only a wet ink signature is lawful. You have to have a true signature on a piece of paper. You know, this electronic stuff is meaningless. It's irrelevant.
This DocuSign and all that, it is a big problem.
Well, again, this is where the check situation is important, because the law requires they can't give the check directly to... They could give the check directly to you. They could do that, because you're the one that's responsible for that money, and you can decide to do what you want to do with it. I mean, you have a contract that you are buying that, but nevertheless, a loan could be used for other things. But the bottom line, there's only two ways this could be done. The check needs to be made out directly to you, and you pay for the service when you're satisfied. You could put it into the bank and cash it. You can give partial payment to the contractor and another payment at a certain time and a final payment at a certain time. You could do that. That's lawful. That's the way it works. The other way, and a lot of times they'll do it, depending on the people doing the loans, okay, is they require a two-party check. But that two-party check must go to you. You're the one in control of that, not the contractor. The contractor's just taking the money. You're responsible to pay it back. So if that check is out there and your signature is on there that you didn't sign, someone's going to jail. That's number one. If they give you a check, and there's no other way that it could happen. Because
they're doing this routinely. They have edited you out of the process.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, anyway, that's your next step. We're coming to an end, so I'll give you another minute.
Do you have a default notice? Do you have a default on your site, or do we have to do that on our own?
No, you can go under Education Starts Here.
Yeah.
You can come down to Law, okay?
Right.
If you're watching, you're on the phone, but if you come down to Law on the website, and then you come over to Court Forms and Processes, you will find defaults in there. Of course, in our course, which is you could take under Education, you could take a Court Access to the Common Law course, okay, and if you click on that, okay, that teaches you how the court system works, how to write your papers, the forms, how to do discovery, how to write papers, the forms. All the stuff that we've been talking to you about is all in there also. I think you're in the course, aren't you? Did you take our course?
I would like to take the course, but I've written my own complaint. I've represented myself in court, and I've written my own complaint.
It'll work fine, but we've got a lot of stuff that you can get for free anyway on the page I told you.
Yeah, okay. And I don't think I have time to take the course. I think I need to get something out to them.
Well, if you understand how things work and you have some blind spots, then you'll be able to fly through the course pretty quick and be able to deal with your blind spots. Okay. Anybody who doesn't know anything about
law, in the course, right?
Huh?
There's other people in the course, right?
Well, yeah, the course was done live, but it's recorded and it's in video. Okay, and so it's in 3-hour videos, okay? And you can stop it at any time and come back a week later, a month later, whatever. Now, anybody that's serious about the course can go through the course and get real good serious stuff within 3 months, okay? And it's possible, I guess, it's 90 hours, so remember, you have to watch 90 hours of videos. So if you can watch 90 hours in a lot less time than 3 months, that's fine. But you need time to digest. Number one, you want to be, redundant, going over things over and over again. And then, there are two things. Number one, once you take the course and you've gone through it, of course, there is a list of everything that's in that course written up like in an index and in subcategories. So you could pull forms here and forms there, or you can also get the book that I wrote for this also, which is called Court Access in the Common Law, which is a lot, almost all of, not everything, but a lot of what's in the course is in this Court Access in the Common Law book, okay? And you got forms and memorandum of law and a lot of things that you can find in, how punitive damages work, types of punitive damages, examples of your petition, filing your petition into the court, and how due process works and go through discovery. I mean, all of that together. I always suggest that people who took the course that they should get the book Court Access in the Common Law, because that's something you could take with you. And in my opinion, the most powerful book when you're in court, as long as you know how the court system works, you know how to write papers. I wrote a handbook for myself. And when I started writing these books, I thought about this handbook, and I said, I should put this into a pocket handbook. And it's pretty cheap. It's like $11 or something, I forget. But it's a pretty thick pocket handbook, okay? It's 311 pages, okay? And it's stuff you can pull off the fly, okay? As long as you understand how things work, write your papers, you could do your, how your forms work and everything. Well, this Common Law Court Handbook, okay, when you're in the court and you need something off the fly, I got a lot of great stuff in here, all kinds of decisions, court decisions, meaning of words, different parts of the process, rules of the court. I mean, all this stuff, okay? And again, I wrote this for myself because
You're talking about Court Access in the Common Law?
Well, this book is called Common Law Court Handbook. It's a handbook. Oh. It's a pocket handbook, but it's thick. Okay, it's 311 pages. It's the size of a pocket handbook, and again, when I started going into court, I needed something that I can draw off quickly. Okay, you know, maybe a court case, maybe a particular statute that will apply to them, or whatever the case may be. And that's what I wrote this book for. And so if you take the book and you look at the table of contents, you can see quite clearly and get to these things very quickly off the fly and respond in court, maybe with a Supreme Court case or whatever the case may be. And this book is a cheap book. Let me see what I charge for this. Again, I try to keep everything cheap. We only make a couple of bucks, and a couple of bucks support what we're doing here. So, you know, people can give us $125 by taking the course. So you're going to get something of very great value while you're giving us the money through that course, that $125, to support the work we're doing here, you know. But go to Welcome, and you come down to Books by John Durash. Let me click on this book and see what we're charging for it. I don't remember. It's pretty cheap. Let's see. Handbook. No, that's Kindle. What am I doing? This is Common Law Court Handbook. Right here it is. Common Law Court Handbook. You can click on that. You can read about this book. It's $11. Okay. And you can read a little bit of this book. This is the book. It's a handbook. 311 pages. Okay. The purpose of this common law handbook is to assist people in the courtroom by arming them with the information needed off the fly. This handbook puts at your fingertips the rules of common law, Supreme Court rulings, U.S. codes, founding documents, founding father quotes that assist you in defending your jurisdiction and rights of due process. Remember, when you enter the court, the judge and bar attorneys, knowingly or not, have hijacked you into an unconstitutional, repugnant civil law court. Therefore, it is up to you to defend and put it onto the record that you opened a court of record, which is that which proceeds according to the common law by trial by jury, which operates under the common law and the rules of common law, in other words, the law of the land. The practice of law is an unalienable right, whereas they claim that you cannot practice civil law in their courts. But remember, you opened a common law court. You're not in their court. And so it's a battle of courts. And you are not practicing law in their civil law court. Additionally, there is no such thing as a license to practice law, and it is not their court. It is we, the people's court. And there's more information to read more about this book. And you can also read a sample of the book. Gives you the layout. Okay. You can see I made the table of contents very simple to be able to get to things quickly. Okay. And then you'll see it's a lot of bold lettering on the key things or bullet points to bring you to the different information that you need or are looking up off the fly while you're in the courtroom. See, that's what I needed, something to refer to in a book like that. That's why I wrote this book.
Probably just helpful. What do you think about taking this to small claims court first? I'm debating about that.
What's the amount?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. I canceled the contract.
What did they claim the amount? What's the claim on the loan? What's the amount?
$12,894.
How much?
$12,894, almost $13,000.
It's too big for small claims. I know in New York, I think in the cities it might be $5,000. A lot of the towns,
it's $10,000 here. So
$10,000 in a small claims court?
But technically, I don't owe that because I canceled. Well, I don't know what they're going to argue.
Well,
but
look, they got paperwork, and if you don't battle it, you can lose. If they come to get their money and they start to try to get control over that, you don't want to be the person brought into the court. You want to be the plaintiff. You want to bring them into the court. That's why you have to send them a notice and demand that you're demanding a copy of the check that was paid out and to who was paid to. You want a copy of that check. And then you'll see who it was made out to and who signed it.
Right.
Because you didn't receive the check.
You know that they're filing UCC-1 liens when they do this.
Yeah,
so
when you go to
sell your house, refinance it, or even get insurance, you can't sell your house.
Well, you know, there's what's called a lien, okay? There's mechanic liens, and then there's also regular liens, okay? But the UCC, a lot of these people will go after judges with that. It's really unlawful because it's without due process.
Well, you see, what I was thinking was, you know, they got all kinds of rules for mechanic liens,
only,
but they...
Only a mechanic's lien could be laid upon a person without going into a court. And that only stays on the books for 9 months, at least here in New York.
There's all kinds of laws and rules for that, but there's nothing for this, for them applying a UCC lien to on solar equipment and HVAC and roofing.
Right. Well, as a contractor, for instance, if I wasn't being paid accordingly to the contract, I would go and I'd serve papers on to the developer or the homeowner or whoever I was building for. And then I would take that, and if they didn't respond and keep their end of the contract, then I would go put a mechanic's lien on their home, okay? Now, mechanic's lien can only be put up on the materials, okay, and as far as construction is concerned. So you put up a mechanic's lien upon them. The mechanic's lien is good for 9 months. But what it does do, it freezes up their ability to get money if they're working through the banks or any kind of an institution and drawing money. Once that lien is on there, then they are notified that the lien is on there, and they freeze up their money. So if they're not going to put me...
It comes up on a title search.
Huh?
It comes up on a title search.
Right, but once you do that, you serve the lien onto the institution, the lending institution. They immediately freeze the money's up going to the person that they're paying. They're not going to get paid anymore. And if you ain't going to pay me, they ain't getting paid either. But then I have 9 months, okay, and I put the stress on the people for 9 months for them to be obedient to the contract. I do the work. I fulfill this accordingly to the prints and the letter of the word, whatever the contract has to say. And your job is to pay. And when they don't pay, they break the contract. Then at that point, before that 9 months is up, there is a renewal period you could do. I don't know how many times you could do it. I think it's two or three, but there's a renewal. But at some point, then you're going to go take it right into the court, because if they don't pay you in 9 months, you know, you renew it, and then you take them into the court and you force them to be.
These are done routinely, and they're good for 5 years, and they have to be renewed, like you say. But all these cases are disputes. They're where the system was inefficient, or they didn't do it right, or, you know, all kinds of things.
Right. And, well, they have arbitration for those things, but you're not in a situation where you have arbitration. I used to do developments. I'd work for developers. I'd go in, do infrastructure, we do buildings, and in the process of construction, there's always an engineer or an architect on the site, and they become the arbitrator, okay? I always put in my contracts on those situations that there'd be arbitration, and so the engineer or the architect would be the arbitrator, and they will rule according to the rules and requirements of the AIA, which is for the architects. And
well, that's interesting, is they're putting arbitration requirements in these contracts.
Did they put an arbitration in your contract?
Yeah, but I canceled the contract within their specified time.
Okay, well, then arbitration doesn't apply to you.
Yeah, because so I don't think
I had a situation where I went into arbitration and with a homeowner who owed me a lot of money. I really got burnt on this thing. I did get part of it, but not what I should have, because you get these weak, piddly arbitrators that people have no clue, and a lot of them don't have clue in construction, and that's a big problem. And when I laid out my case before the arbitrator, I should have won everything hands down. But, you know, they did this pansy-ansy stuff. He tried to make it good for both of us, so
right.
I'd benefit. No. They owe me money, okay? And so I got stuck into that arbitration. I would never do it again. It has to be AIA for me as far as construction is concerned. American Institution of Architects. It's and it's the AGC contracts, okay, which is the general contractors, put together as under the architects.
They're going to do is try to make me do arbitration. That's what I'm concerned about.
Well, if you got rid of the contract, if you lawfully put that contract down within the first 4 days, if that's what they the law is in your state, then no, you can't be held liable to going into arbitration. No.
Well, according to their contract, they said you had to cancel within, I think it was 3 or 4 days.
And did you do?
Or if you're over 65, you get 7 days.
Okay. Are you over 65 at the time?
Yeah. So okay. I canceled within, you know, I canceled in 4 days.
You did a certified letter?
I emailed them a notice and told them to come and remove the system. They're not denying it. They keep saying they will remove the system when I sign their hold harmless and non-disclosure. And I went back to them and said, you have no standing to ask me to sign a non-disclosure and hold harmless agreement. They have no leverage whatsoever.
Well, look, it'll probably hold up because there's communications, written communications between the two, and you did do the cancellation. They acknowledged the cancellation, so that's pretty good. But yep. Nevertheless, for anybody listening or even for yourself in the future, always do it certified mail, always. And you want to get everything certified. I'd even notarize the cancellation. And then, of course, you keep a copy and you send them a copy through certified mail. And now, now you have a sworn document that's certified that's in a court of law, stands up as the fact.
Yeah, I had the notice and demand served by the sheriff.
We're way over, and I'm tired tonight. Matter of fact, I almost was tonight.
Well, it was an update, and I wanted to know about the default. So.
All right. Good talking to you, Linda. All right. We're going to end for tonight. I see another person in the queue. Walt, I'm sorry. I got to go to sleep. I'm exhausted, so hopefully we'll talk next week. All right. With that, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And don't forget, we have Bible studies every Wednesday, 7:30, right here in this room. Matter of fact, we're starting a new study this week. It's going to be, we're doing a short study, a 9-part study on the book of Revelation. So if anybody's interested in that, first part one will be this Wednesday. All right. Good night, everybody.